All right, so this is the 37th in the series, Shaul's death and its aftermath. So Shaul HaMelech died in the same way that he lived, very enigmatically. That is to say, with his method of death, his manner of death, as murky, as unclear as many other things that he did during his life. It generated a very vehement debate as to the halachic propriety of his actions. You recall from last time that Shaul died on the battlefield, essentially a self-inflicted death, falling on his sword in order to avoid capture and disgrace at the hands of the Plishtim. So was it an act of heroism or an act of cowardice? So on that, three people differ. There's no doubt, as we discussed last time, Chazal justified on a number of grounds Shaul's suicide, and it became a paradigm even for Jews committing suicide in medieval times to avoid falling into the hands of the Christians or other tormentors. In his battle, at the end of Shmuel Aleph, so Israel loses not only a melech, a king, but they also lose the upper hand to the Plishtim. And if you think about it, the Plishtim are centered in Gaza, Ashkelon, the Ashdod area, along the Mediterranean coast towards the southern part of Israel. Shaul dies, and not only is he killed and his son's killed, but the army of Israel is routed, and they flee the battlefield, and that takes place in Emek Israel, Harei Gilboa. So the reach of the Plishtim extend to the heartland of Israel, almost close to the north, close to the Galil. So they, in fact, at this point, conquered a substantial part of the country. So Israel needs more than a new king. They need, in fact, a new spirit, and they need confidence, and they need a hope, an infusion of hope, and a national and spiritual renewal. So David is the man. But now he is only perceived as a tribal leader, the leader of Shevet Yehudah, not a king. The process of asserting the monarchy and gaining the support of the people begins here in Shmuel Bez and continues throughout Shmuel Bez, and David must win the support of the people. That's the first few brachim, and once his monarchy is stabilized, then he continues on and with the other events of his reign. So David furthers that goal of asserting control over the people through his reaction to Shaul's death, which we'll discuss tonight. There are basically two events. One is questionable as some of Shaul's actions were, and the other is laudable. But both of them, we'll see, serve the purpose of bringing David closer to the people and bring the people closer to David. They look at him not as he was, first a protege of the king, and then as a rival of the king, the nirdaf, the pursuit of the king, but they see him really as royal material. So when we left David in Shmuel Aleph, we begin Shmuel Beis tonight, Perek Aleph. He had just defeated Amalek at Ziklag and rescued the captives of the tribe of Yehudah. And note, of course, that Shaul had not succeeded ever in defeating Amalek ultimately, and David will take up that battle. So he rejoices in the victory, and then he receives the news. So look at number one. After Shaul dies, David returns from smiting Amalek. He dwells in Siklag for 2 days. Vayhi bayom ha'shlishi, on the third day, v'hine yishbo min ha'machaneh miyim Shaul uv'gadav kruim v'adamal rosho. A person comes from the camp who was with Shaul. His clothing is torn. There's dirt on his head, meaning he comes disheveled. We just saw it. He comes disheveled. And he tells David the news. Vahi bevoa David, vahi pull arts of his shuffle. Comes to David, falls to the ground, bows down. Meaning, he submits himself to the authority of David, prostrates himself. Vayomer David, Eimi zeh tavo, where are you coming from? Vayomer elav, he said, Mimachane Yisrael nimlotti, I've escaped from the camp of Israel. Escaped. Notice Chazal point out how he breaks the news to Shaul very slowly, almost gingerly. First to say he escaped. The implication of escape means that it wasn't a victory. It didn't go as well as they'd hoped. Vayomer lo David, me haya davar, haged nalis. He says, what happened? Tell me now. Vayomer, and he says, asher nos ha'amin ha'milchama. What's the first thing he says? The people fled the battlefield, meaning to defeat. Vigam harbei nafal min ha'am. And many people from the nation were killed. Many soldiers were killed. Vayamusu, I'm sorry, they fell and they were killed. Vigam Shaul v'Yonasan b'no Mesu. Shaul and Yonasan, his son, were also killed. So now, of course, again, you break bad news to someone, you do it very slowly, almost leading up to it. As they absorb the initial blows, then they're ostensibly able to receive the worst news. Vayomer David el Anar Hamagid Lo. David says, naturally wants the verified information. How do you know? Now the Nar says as follows. Vayomer Hanar Magidlo. So the young man, the messenger, said, Nikro Nikresi Bahar Gilboa, Vine Shol Nishon Al Chaniso. He was called to Har Gilboa, where the battle took place, and he saw Shaul leaning on his spear. Vine Arechev Uvale Parashim Hibiku. And the chariots and the cavalry of the Plishtim overtaking him. Vayifan acharav vayireini. He turned around and he saw me. Vayikra elai v'amar hineini. And he called to me and I said, here I am. Note, you'll recall, this does not appear in the previous parak that we learned, that Shaul had this conversation with anyone. The implication left from our parak is that Shaul asked his armor bearer for a spear, a sword. He fell on his sword, and that's where he died. Here the Nar tells a different story. But Nar Hamagid, Hamagid Lo, the one who's relating the information. Right. He could have said, Vayomer Anar. Right. Vayomer Li Mi Oto, so Shaul had said to him, who are you? V'omar elov, I said to him, Amaleki Anochi. I'm a descendant of Amalek. V'yomer elai, he said to me, Amod no alai umosaseini. Please stand over me and kill me. And he finished me off. Umosaseini. Ki achazani ashavatz, because I'm gripped by the throes of death. Ki cholod nashibi, I still have a little life within me. But of course he's afraid of being captured and subjected to humiliation at the hands of the Plishtim. So the Nar says, Vamoda love, Vamosaseyu. I stood over him and I killed him. Meaning he probably took the sword and stabbed him to finish him off. Kiyodati kilo yufi achay niflo, because I knew he would not live after he fell on his sword, meaning he was dying anyway. All I did was hasten his death. Vakacha nezer asher rosho v'etzoda asher olzro, I took the crown on his head and the bracelet on his arm, v'aviyem adoni heina, I brought them to you, in deference to David, who he knew would be Shaul's successor. Alright, he offers the crown and the bracelet to David. Now, Chazal differ as to the veracity of his account. Did it actually happen this way? Like you said, possible. And the other possibility is that he's not telling the truth, but he's telling the story to David so as to ingratiate himself to the new king, knowing that Shaul had been David's enemy, so the enemy of your enemy is your friend, so now he killed Shaul, presumably David would reward him as the one who killed Shaul's David's nemesis. It was a fatal miscalculation for this Nar Amaleki. What's the immediate response? The pasuk says, "Vayachazek David b'vigadav vayikraim." David took hold of his garments and he tore them. Gam kol ha'anoshim asher ito. And all the people with David, they tore their garments as well. Look at four. We derive halacha from this. The Radak says, Mikan lamdu rabbeinu zal shechayv adam lekro al nasi v'al avdeistin. A person is obligated to kriya not just for relative, but when the nasi dies, when the avdeistin dies also. Shaul was the nasi, prince, king. Yonasan was the avdeistin. The chena rov tzibur, so too, if there's an event which kills a substantial number of Jews, you have to tear your garments over it as well. So we limit it really to a relative. Mikra din, it should be for a great person who dies, the nasi, or if many Jews die. I remember when Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal died, so we discussed this point in the yeshiva, because as the Posek Hador, he had a din of nasi. The question was, do we tear kri at that point? You see, it wasn't widely discussed. Remember the yeshivas, 1986, so it's Yartzeit is Tainas Esther. So we were discussing it at the time. But you see, there's such a halacha. If a nasi dies, to tear one's garments, and you see that's what David did over here. What else does he do? Vayispidu vayisku, vayatsumara oraz. All of them, they started wailing, crying, fasting, until nightfall. Al Shaul, al Yonasan beno, over the death of Shaul, and Yonasan his son, Ya'am Hashem al Beis Yisrael, kinafu bechorav. And for God's people, and the house of Israel, nafu bechorav, who fell by the sword. Fell by the sword. Am Hashem, Chazal say, that is Shaul and Yonasan. And Beis Yisrael, that's the Hamonam. That's who they were lamenting. All right? What were the tears about? So you see, we'll see the greatness of David throughout, that even though his nemesis was dead, he never perceived Shaul as his enemy. And once someone dies, especially someone whose behavior was, shall we say, problematic, over the years, in many areas, but certainly vis-a-vis David, you see he had a different a perception. And whatever sins Shaul may have committed, his death is atones for them. Nisa mechaperes. So, for example, Rashi says in number 2, Pasuk Ches, Shaul said, Achazani ashovatz, I'm gripped by the throes of death. Achidani retisa. He says, I'm caught by retisa restis, means dread, panic. Umedis agoda, what's shavatz? Mishum avon akoanim shaharag, v'chasub behen ksonis tashbeitz. Tashbeitz, shavatz, a play on words. That they recognize Shaul's death here, because Shmuel Hanavia told him, was a retribution for Shaul's killing the Kohanim. You see, once someone commits a sin, and he's punished, and the punishment atones for the sin, they're sorry. You don't linger over a person's past. The person sins. The person is now righteous. A person is following the Torah. Or a person sinned and it was punished. So you say, Mishu's Mechaperes over most of Eros. It's just a handful that are not. See the Rambam in the first parak of Hilchos Tshuva. But Misa, death, will atone for almost every sin. So therefore, Shaul is again, he's Shaul HaMelech, he's the tzaddik, so David mourns him, the kapara. Who was this Nar HaMaleki? Before we see what happened to him. So Rashi says in number 2, in Pasuk Beis, when he ish bomin hamachaneh, yesh bepsikto shezeh doeg. The Medrash says it was doeg hadomi. Veinam yushav alibi, Rashi doesn't accept it. Doesn't accept it for obvious reasons. If it was Doeg, David knew him. So why would he ask, who are you? So there are other opinions. Look at number 5 for a moment. The Yalkut Shimoni. The Yalkut says, Nizkar Remez Kuf Memalot, Nizkar David Bosa Shoa Mashenemar Lemosh Rabbeinu. You know what, we'll get back to that in a moment. Skip down a few lines. Omer B'Yitzhak, the 5th line. B'no Shal Doeg HaDomi Hayah. Wasn't Doeg. It was Doeg's sons, and now we understand David may not have recognized them. Doeg was called Hadomi because he lived there, he was from that territory. Vamar Lo'ar, so it was the son of Doeg. And now we come to the real point. What exactly does David do? He kills him. Vayom pasukid gimel. Vayom David al anar magid lo. He says to the young man who had related this story, Amy Zoto, where are you from? So he repeats again, Vayomer, Benish Ger Amaleki Anochi. I'm the son of an Amalekite convert. Vayomer love David. It comes to the issue. Immediate, swift justice. Ech lo yoreso l'shloach yadcho l'shaches es Mashiach Hashem. How did you not fear to raise your hand to destroy the anointed one of God? And what gave you the right to kill Melech Yisrael? Vayikra David l'achad mehana arim vayomer. David called to one of his lads and said to them, Gash tegabo, come forward and strike him. Vayatehu vayamos. So they struck him down and they killed him. It's known as killing the messenger because of the message. Vayomer lo David, damcha roshecha. David said, your blood is on your head. Because your mouth testified against you, saying, Onochi mosati es Mashiach Hashem. I killed God's anointed. He admitted that he did it, so David executed very quick justice. The question is, of course, how and why? So now if we go back to the Yalkut, number 5, Nizka David bos Asha Mashanema Lemosh Rabbeinu. David recalled what had been said to Moshe Rabbeinu in Yom HaBiyomot, Parsha Zohar, this coming Shabbos. Im yavo echad mikol umo so'olom izgaya shikablu oso. If a non-Jew of any nation comes forward, wants to convert, you accept them. Umizaro shel Amalek, al yikablu oso. But the seed of Amalek we do not accept. So he said to him, v'omar lo damcha roshecha, that your blood is on your head. Because you're on Amaleki, Timchez Zvechar Amalek Mitachas Hashemayim, Lo Tishkoch, Milchamol Hashem Amalek Midor Dor, we have to exterminate every trace of Amalek. God wages an eternal battle against Amalek from generation to generation, L'tachnema Midor Dor. In every generation Amalek appears, we have to kill him. So according to this, according to the Yalkut Shimoni, David exercised the prerogative of the Tzibur to kill any person from Amalek, so he killed this Amaleki as well. Still, as the Mechiltim B'Shalach, at the end of the Sedra, makes a similar point. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, David says the same thing. Nizkar David, he remembered what Moshe had said, all right? Oh, it's the same point. Mechilt makes the same point as the Yalkut. Okay. The real question is the one that the Malbim asks in number 6. How could it be? How does David just kill someone based on his own confession? A confession is not admissible in a Jewish court, much less grounds for punishment. And how could he kill someone without any witnesses or without any warning? All those things are required by the Jewish court. So how is it possible that would be done? Now, the number of possibilities present before we get to the Mefarshim, just based on what we've read up till now. David killed him as the Yalkut and the Filta indicate, because he said he was Amaleki. And it's not directly connected to this event, but granted, the context was this event. And the fact that he killed Shaul gave David a pretext to kill him extrajudicially without having a trial, simply because he was Amalek. Or he killed him because of the Doeg connection. Either, as the Yalkut says, Rabbi Yitzchak, that he was Doeg Adomi or Doeg's son. So Doeg represented a threat. Certainly, his son would also represent a threat because they were allied with Shaul. But we have to understand a little more than that. The Malm asked the question, let's look at the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Take this up. Perek Yudches Halacha Vav. Zeres HaKosev Hi She'ein Menisim Beis Din V'lo Malkin Es Ha'od Nebodas Tiv. The Zeres HaKosev, that we do not kill people, Beis Din cannot kill, even give Malkos based on a confession. El Al Pi Shnayim Eidim. But you need 2 witnesses to the event. Why? It's obvious, because confessions can be coerced. Now, happens not infrequently. And you could have also President Meshuggah confesses to a variety of crimes. Many times the famous killing, by the way. Any of the famous killing, at least in New York, it happens all the time. They don't publicize that anymore. You'll have 10, 20, 30 people surrendering themselves at Police Plaza, so they just gain the notoriety. So they question them always. That's why they never release details about a spectacular homicide until after they've made the arrest, because they ask the person for the details. And if they can't relate the details, means they weren't there. But the other issue on confessing. So that's why you can't accept the confession halacha. So how did Yeshua kill Achan, which we discussed a few years back? Or David Legar Amaleki, how did David kill this Amalek convert, Badas Piyam, through their confession? So the Rambam answers, it was Harasha Paiso. It was an exigent circumstance. It was necessitated by the moment. O Din Malchusayo. It was simply the royal prerogative, as the Rambam says elsewhere. The Gemara says the king can kill anybody he wants at any time, even without the approval of Sanhedrin, in order to exercise dominion and to show, in fact, that he's the king. This can't be a brutal murder. It has to be in some context. Usually the context is a rebellion. But that's Din Malchus. The king has certain prerogatives. So we'll discuss the difference between Din Malchus here and Harasha in a moment. So what exactly happened? What was Harasha? Why would he kill someone? Why would he kill this? What did the kid do, really? Canaan related that the Shaul died. And he claimed to have hastened Shaul's death by a few moments. What did he really do? Is it worth a death penalty? So Malbim explains in 6, going back there, Pasuk 9, Domcha Roshecha, Inemar Shehoya Amaleki Mamush. If indeed he was an Amaleki, then it's not so troubling. Sheben Noach Nerag Belo Asra. A Ben Noach can be killed without warning. Benarag afala treifa, he killed, he's put to death even for killing someone whose death is imminent. Benarag bedayin echod of eid echod, or killed with one dayin or one aid. And yeshloma shuadin shenarag badas atzma. You can make the same case, same argument that the standards of proof are lesser for a ben Noach, so he could be put to death also for, based on his own confession. Commotion Nergal Pikaro, like he could be convicted based on testimony of a relative. In fact, some of the Rishonim say that Rambam quotes this in the Mora, that unlike under our judicial system regarding Jews, a guy can be executed based on even circumstantial evidence, compelling circumstantial evidence. The Melech has the power to execute based on that. So you see the standards differ. So that's if he was not Jewish. That's what David said. Your own mouth testified against you. If we say he's a Jew, then nerag mi din amalchus. What's the din malchus? So it's a set an example. What's that? Set an example. Nobody has the right to assassinate the Melech Yisrael. Ula kabbalas chazal shahoya doeg shayachayiv nisa mitkvar ot novir konim. According to the opinion that says that the Nar Amaleki was actually Doeg, Tanei she's Chayv Nisa anyway. Shal ze omar domecho b'loshen rabim, where it says domcho, it actually says domei with just the yud. And you know, the original text said domcho, as if it said domecho. Dalad mem yud chof, as opposed to domcho. So Domcha means your blood. Domecha means your blood. So you're guilty for many people being killed, if that's Doeg. Ramaz lo shagam sh'al harega shol ein adam neman al atzmo v'chol ze picha ona b'cho ki kfar yisagar harega sakon v'akon ha-mashiach. So it wasn't just that you killed Shaul, you killed also the Kohen. Right, it's a little, like Rashi says, a little far-fetched to say it was Doeg or Domi, or even his relative. I want to focus on that one point that Malbim made. Look at number 7, because the Ralbag makes a similar point. The Ralbag on Pasuk Yudalad, Eich lo yareisu l'shloach yodcho l'shacheses Mashiach Hashem. So Ralbag says, a puzzle, Madua tziva David l'harga, why did he kill him? V'hinei yasa zeber tzon shol v'akosh asa, he did this at Shaul's request. The answer is not what you're asking. If a person says to his friend, hit me, and the friend hits him, he's chayiv. Why? Because certainly if you kill the king, if the Torah says not to do something and your friend says to do it, so listen to the Torah. The Torah warned us not to kill. Certainly not to kill the Melech Yisrael. Even though there were no witnesses, and he confessed himself, so he can't be convicted. David did this based on the circumstances. So people should not be quick to raise their hand. It shouldn't be a trivial thing to attack the Melech Yisrael. This is the very reason why David himself did not kill Shaul when he had the opportunity twice. Even though Shaul was a rodef of David, David was clearly justified in killing him. Nevertheless, he didn't kill him. So you see, in fact, this is an essential concept. And it reveals the greatness of David. So you may think that what he did here was questionable. In fact, David made a very powerful statement. Here, Shaul was trying to kill him, and yet David never perceived him as the enemy, as is noted on several occasions. David himself could have killed Shaul, but he didn't. Why didn't he when he had the chance? Because assassination is not an option. Assassination of Melech Yisrael is not an option. Because if we would kill each king or each leader that we don't like, there'll never be a leader who serves out his term. Because every leader has opponents. Every leader has enemies. Even David Melech Yisrael had enemies. So if we're going to accept as an option, like it is, for example, in the Arab world, or in an African society, that if you don't like the leader, you stage a coup and kill the leader, and then you take over, you become the despot, if that's to be Malchus Yisrael, then that can't be. You see, where did David choose to make the statement? Not about himself, you know, killing people who might raise a hand against him, but against those who tried to kill his enemy, tried to kill the one who was killing him. Because, in fact, it's a terrible, situation. Now, we recognize we had in our own lifetime, just a little less than a decade ago, the Prime Minister of Israel was killed. So you see, in fact, you can look at it as a terrible thing for a number of reasons, but essentially the Rabbag is saying here that it harms the society in which it takes place, because one could have legitimate grievances against Rabin and legitimate grievances against Peres and Netanyahu and Barak and Sharon. You can kill everybody. So then you have a brutal, violent society. So that's why you see David is stating here that in terms of really the first rule of Malchus, that even he did not exercise that option. Because for Jews, if that's to be used, then we'll have no people. We'll have no nation. That was the decline. You assassinate king after king. Look at Gedaliah. When Gedaliah was the governor of Judea, he was killed. So then Yishuv Eretz Yisrael ended. That's some Gedaliah. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael ended. Yes. You see, they never tried to kill him. I don't think they tried to kill him. It's just not an option. Other Sanhedrin can exercise power. You can depose a king. These Sanhedrins are powerful enough. But for a person to assume individually responsibility to kill the king, and notice the extenuating circumstances here. He wasn't killing Shaul, the Amaleki, in order to enthrone David. He was killing him based on Shaul's request. Help me die. I don't want to be taken captive. And I'm going to die anyway in a few moments. So David says, Afal Pichain, when it comes to Melech Yisrael, so Echlo Yareisa L'Shloch Yadcho L'Shachais Mashiach Hashem. And how can then you go boast? How can you boast? Anochi Mosati Es Mashiach Hashem. I killed God's anointed. That cannot be. Now the Rabban continues that it seems that, one second, it seems that this Nar was not a Ger Tzedek, alright, in which case it makes his death even easier to understand. But nevertheless, the point that David was making, the Rabbah takes out of the context, as the Malbim does in the second region, out of Amalek. It's not the war against Amalek. It's rather the war for the stability of Malchus Yisrael. And if a precedent is established that one can kill the king for any reason, then Malchus Yisrael will not survive, as many indicated. It did not survive for this very reason. Now, in fact, if that's the case, it's not cruelty to the messenger that we have here, but it's a limud teaching to all Jews. Even if the melech is a rodet, no one has the right to raise his hand against Mashiach Hashem. So it's a very important limud l'doros. So David himself did not kill Shaul for personal reasons. What is this then? That's the Din Malchus. Din Malchus means, or Rasha means he killed him based on the exigency of the moment. Emergency situation. Couldn't let this person live. The Din Malchus is to establish the norm of the royal house of Israel that assassination is not an option. If the Melech is a Rasha, you have to find some other way of dealing with him. But you can't kill him, because otherwise we will not survive. Din Malchus means, in this context, upholding the honor of royalty generally, even if they're bums on occasion. Can't say that publicly, but even if they're no good, for posterity's sake. So Malchus, as an institution, should survive. You can't identify the Melech anymore as a person. The Melech becomes a Melech. He's a symbol, he's a figure, even more than he's a person. Som tasim alecha Melech, shetei mosalecha. You have to fear the king. Whoever he is, you have to have awe of the king. Whoever the king might be, even a Rasha. So therefore, even in this case, he had no right to do that. That's the first point. I think in retrospect, sounds harsh, the treatment of his Ger Maleki, but David was correct in laying down the law. Yes? Right. That's correct. That's correct. So what was the mistake that he made? Boasting. Who? He never would have killed him. He wouldn't have, David wouldn't have killed him. Oh, Hamagidlo. That's correct. What does it mean? That's boasting. That's what it is. Now, all he had to say was, how does he know he saw Shaul leaning on his sword dead? The fact that he said, Picha ana b'chaleimor, anochi mosati es Mashiach, I killed him. That was his death sentence. Once a person is able to brag that he killed Melech Yisrael, then you have to make him an example for generations. But that's not the way to treat a Melech Yisrael. So even though Shaul had asked him if the guy had the seichel, he wouldn't have said anything. I saw him dead, he was dead. The question is, Ger Amaleki, did he convert? You know, I mentioned the Yalkut, the Mechilta. Others disagree that even an Amaleki can convert. All right? The question is, can he become a full Jew or just a Ger Toshav? Or, at a later stage in history, and I discussed this on Shabbos a few years ago, at a later stage in history, after Sancheirith came and engaged in mass population transfers, so no nation dwelled on its original soil, Bosan Cherev Uvildo Kolumos, then we really don't know who are genetically Amaleki anymore. So therefore, even if someone is living there, he's able to convert. Based on that, the Gemara says, Mi b'nei bonav shel Haman, lom d'tor b'bnei brak. Haman's own descendants converted to Yadus, and the short Torah in b'nei brak. I think I know where they learned, by the way. They're still alive. Anyway, that's the first point. Second point. What happens next? By Konein David es Akinazos, David then begins this dirge, this elegy, Al Shaul Val Yonasan Beno. So the reality of David's loss, that he lost not only Shaul HaMelech, who'd been his mentor, the one who brought him into the palace originally, but he also lost his soulmate, Yehonasan, that reality slowly sinks in, and then you see the other great aspect of David's life, who we'll describe later as Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael, the sweet singer of Israel. So now you see the beauty, the depth of the message, and the poetic nature of David HaMelech, David this warrior. So he begins the dirge. Vayomer, he said, Lilamei b'nei Yehuda toshes, to teach the children of Yehudah how to use the bow and arrow. Hinech chesuvah sefer hayashar. Behold, this is written in the book of uprightness. Very strange and cryptic phrase. What is he talking about? So if you turn the page, by the way, this is number 10, the whole kino, and we'll be turning back and forth to the mafarshim on the other side. So lamed levnei Yehuda keshas. So what does this have to do with anything? How is this a eulogy for Shaul and Yonason to teach Bnei Yehuda how to use the arrow? The number of pshatim. Look first, 13, the Radak. Yesh mafarshim mikan va'ilach tzarch lamed levnei Yehuda keshas. So Radak says, this first phrase is not part of the eulogy. It's an introductory remark. Saying what? Until now they could rely on the valor and strength of Shaul and Yonason. Now Bnei Yehuda, they have to learn to fight themselves. They have to know how to use the keshes. Hinech suvash sefer yeshua. Behold, it's in the book of the upright. What's that book? So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chafei Amar Aleph, found in number 11. My sefer yeshua. Armichia bar Abram Yochanan. Zeh sefer Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Shenikru Yesharim. It's the book of the Torah, the book of our fathers, who are called the upright, as Bilam said, Tamos Nafshi Mos Yesharim. The Hecha Ramiza, so how do we know Lulamed Livnei Yehuda Keshas? How do we know they have to become warriors too? Because it says in Yaakov's Bracha, Yehuda Ata Yoducha Hecha, you will, your brothers will acknowledge you, serve you. Yadcha Be'oref Ayvecha, your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. So in fact, Yehud himself will not just be royalty, but will have to be the fighting element of Israel as well. And the Gemara has some the Zoi Malacha Shetzricha Yad Keneged Oref, which type of warfare requires a hand opposite the neck? So that is Keshas, archery. You have to put your hand in back, one hand in front of your neck, one hand in back of the neck. No archers here, apparently. You know how many archers left today? You don't see one in New York that often. So that is Keshas. Or Sefer Yashas Mishnah Torah, Sefer Dvarim, see Yashar Vatov, Ezoi Malacha Shetzricha Shtei Adayim, which Malacha requires two hands? Yadav Rav Lo, that is Keshas. You need two hands to shoot a bow and arrow. As opposed to a sword, requires just one hand. Or Sefer Yashas Sefer Shoftim, Isha Yashar Bein of Yasa. So why then is it called, what's the reference to Keshes here? Alright, Lamandas, Doris Bnei Yisrael, Lamda Milchoma, Bezoi Melach, Milchoma Shetzricha Limud, Hevim is a Keshes. So Keshes, archery is difficult. It's a difficult form of warfare, but it's very successful. So you shoot, as we'll see, you shoot at a distance, and you're able to inflict grievous harm on your enemy. So according to our doc, what David is telling his men, not part of the eulogy, rather, he's comforting his tribe that they will learn how to fight. Lamei livnei Yehuda keshes. Continuing on, Kodem shechel konen aleihem amar lanashov, Al tisyo ashu min atovah. Don't give up hope. Don't give up the prospect of good things happening. Vayerach levavchem. Don't become frightened because Shaul and Yonason died. Ki keshes hamolchama biyad bnei Yehuda. Bnei Yehuda can fight. Vilohemi agvura. And that's what the Torah says, Yadcha ba'oref ayvecha. So he started with, who was the eulogy to? Who was the audience? Bnei Yehuda, the ones with him in Siklag. He's encouraging them not to despair over the death of Shaul and Yonason, so they could confront any enemy in front of them. Other pshatim as well. Look at number 19 in the parish of Abarbanel. He says, Afana shlishi, there's a number of pshatim. And this appears most correct to him. Sheroy Elohim sheitzaru v'yivku mod al ra'azos. David was teaching his men that they had to mourn. Even though Shaul had been their target for a long time, and they had been on the run from Shaul, im mivas am Yisrael vim bavur shol ubonav, they have to cry both for shol and for the people. Im yosos soneosom verodef achrem, even though they were hated and pursued, v'zelo mivas atzmo ki mivas givur asom uchvodom shagolot kavod miYisrael. It's not because of their own might, but it's because of the diminution of the glory of Israel, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what he said. Keshes, he says, Keshes, daigov atzon. Kesh like kasher, hardness. He had to teach them sadness, worry. They shouldn't be happy that Shaul died. On the contrary, never gloat over the death of a rival. Also, number 12. What else did he teach them? Yerushalmi, in the Sefer Soto. Vayomer lulamei levnei Yehuda keshes. Lo mistavra de lo lulamei bnei Yehuda. Mihoya, if he was not going to teach them, who would teach them? What's the pshat? So David taught them another thing. Kevan shat tzadikim mistalkin hasonin borim mizgarim b'Yisrael. When the righteous die, the enemies of Israel come forward and start to attack us. You see this a few times in Tanakh. The first case of Aaron HaKohen. When Aaron died, right after he was buried, by Shmaknani, Melech Haro, they heard that Aaron died, the tzaddik dies, the people are weakened, despondent, they feel vulnerable, that's when the enemy comes forward. That's what he's telling them, now we have to learn Keshas, because now the enemy will be emboldened, as it is they've conquered half the land. But they killed the king too, Melech Yisrael is dead, so now we have to strengthen ourselves. And he says also, the other point, which is worthy of mentioning, that if we, which is worth mentioning rather, if we are a worthy people, then Hashem Yilochem Lochem. This chat makes it part of the eulogy. If we're worthy, God fights our battles. Like the original conquest of Canaan, God fought, no casualties, God fought our battles. But if we're Beinonim, if we're not completely tzaddikim, then we have to fight ourselves with Derech HaTeva. If you're going to fight with Derech HaTeva, that requires training, tactics, strategy, l'lamei l'vnei Yehuda, l'lamei b'nei Yehuda koshas. You have to teach them, hinei chsuva sefer yeshar, that's what's written in the Torah. The Torah says, God will fight our battles if they're worthy. But if not, doesn't mean we have to be killed. It means you have to go into battle prepared. And that's what the Torah demands. The army of Israel, be prepared. What are the themes of the eulogy? I can find repeated in Kinos. In fact, it says, Vaikoning David Sakinos Os. If I remember correctly, it's the first time it's used in this context. We're familiar with Kinos from Tisha B'Av. What's a Kino? A Kino is a lamentation, but it's really an expression of two basic emotions, grief and shock. Grief and shock. Grief over the event, and shock, echo, over how this event could have happened. How is it possible? Mashiach Hashem should be killed. And also there's an undercurrent here of Kabbalah Sadin, that if this happened, it must be the Ratzon Hashem. So those are really the three things of Kinos generally. Grief, horror, shock, and Kabbalah Sadin, accepting God's judgment. Continuing in number 10, Hatzvi Pasuk Yitzas, Hatzvi Yisrael al bomosecha cholol, O splendor of Israel, upon your heights lie the slain. Ech naflu giborim. How is it possible that the mighty have fallen? How have the mighty fallen? So that's a phrase you find very often arayom in Israel when anybody dies in battle. Ech naflu giborim. We'll have it on the sign. What's Svi Yisrael? The number of pshatim. Svi, splendor, is either reference to the splendor of Israel, meaning the melech, Shaul, the Barbanel says, or to Eretz Yisrael. Look at the Metzudas David, number 14. The Tzvi. So the Gemara says, we know that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi, the land of the deer. What's the familiar reference? Yehoram Gaon, the famous song in the 70s, El Eretz Tzvi. Ay, ay, ay. Where is the culture here? El Eretz Tzvi, the land of the deer. So the Gemara says in Ksubas, Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the Eretz Tzvi, why is it called the land of the deer? Just like the deer is swift afoot, so to Eretz Yisrael, swift to produce its crops. So here means something else. Here it's a lament. Svi Yisrael. How could Eretz Yisrael, says Metzudos, Hatzvi Yisrael, Es eretz achamuda v'chi roi sheyi echalal b'mosecha. Hey, Maria Gilboa, the mountains of Gilboa, the heartland of Eretz Yisrael. Really a beautiful place. How is it possible that this splendid place in Eretz Yisrael should hold the corpses of the Melech Yisrael and his princes? How could that be? Eich naflu sham giborim. That's the reference to Eretz Yisrael. Hatzvi b'Yisrael. Al tagidu v'gas. Al tevasur v'chutzos Ashkelon. Don't tell this in Gath. Don't spread the news in the environs of Ashkelon, meaning don't tell the Plishtim lest they gloat. Ken tismachna benos Plishtim. Ken talozna benos arilim. Lest the daughters of the Plishtim rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised jubilate over this event. That's also a very common Israeli idiom, ad hayom. If someone wants to keep a secret, they'll say, al tagidu begat, based on David, you've heard that. Al tagidu begat, that's where it's from. Don't tell it to people who should not know. That's the chat. Horeva gilboa, al tal v'al matar lechem uzdei trumos. Now again, in keeping with the style of the eulogy, he really curses the Horei Gilboa, as if they had a choice to refuse. There should be no dew, no rain upon you, you should not produce any crops, no fields of bounty. Hisham nigal magengi barim, magen shol b'li mashiach v'shamen. Because there, the shield of the mighty ones of Shaul, his shield, it was as if it was unanointed with oil, meaning he was treated like a regular soldier. Al tagidu v'gat, don't compound the chil Hashem. Hisham nigal magen giborim. There, the armor of Shaul failed. So if he was killed, it must be, that's the rasan Hashem. That's God's will. So this is tzidik hadin. Midam chalolim michelev giborim. From the blood of the slain, the fat of the mighty, keshes Yehonasan lo nasog achor. Yehonasan's bow would not recoil anymore. He did not even kill at that battle. The sword of Shaul would not return empty. But of course, it's euphemistic. In this battle, both the bow and the sword did return empty. The Malbim explains in number 15. Yonasan was the archer, and Shaul was the swordsman. And it's different types of warfare. He mentions, you need both. The archer fights at a distance. So there he can kill many people, and if he sees it's not working out, so he could, or he's victorious, he could leave without endangering himself. Whereas the swordsman has to kill in hand-to-hand combat. So there, sometimes you can't kill. He mentions if the opponent is very fat, heavy, it's hard to stab him to death. So both are necessary. What you have here, essentially what he's saying, is that there's a balance. Yonasan fought from a distance with his arrows. Shaul fought up close, right? You have the machine gun fire, which is close, artillery fire, longer range, and they both failed. And here they were the leading warriors of the generation. Despite Yonasan and Shaul being superior soldiers, they were, and comrades, you see, they had they balanced their techniques. Nevertheless, they failed. And this goes back to the shock portion of the eulogy. How is it possible that Keshes Yonasan, he never failed. Cherev Shaul, he never failed. And here, in fact, they did. Another famous pasuk. Shaul v'Yonasan, Shaul and Yonasan, ha-ne'ahavim v'hane'imim v'chayehem. They are beloved and pleasant in their lifetimes. U'v'mosom lo nifradu. In their deaths, they were not separated. Comrades. Minishorim kalu, swifter than eagles, me'arayos goveru, stronger than lions. This avarachim, this whole phrase was taken, put in avarachimim, and in fact you find it also whenever there's a tzara, a national tzara, Jews are killed, these phrases are used as well. What's the pshat? So look at number 20 in the Barbanel again. Uvamosam lo nifradu. So again, it speaks highly of both of them. They didn't flee the battlefield. They fought with valor. They didn't, Radak says, abandon the nation, even though they knew they would die in battle. So Barbanel says, Im Hayos Shemin Sharim Kalu, Lelechas mimakom lemakom, ume ariyos gover b'milchama. Even though they were swift and they could have fled, and they were strong like lions, and they could have fought their way out. V'zeh b'li sofek davar gadol, it's a great thing. Milchama chazakam b'bubelas lo yirish esochiv. There's always a fog of war, the battles, fog of battles. People don't know what's going on. You see, there's always a great post-mortem after the wars, after the battles end, to figure out what happened, what went right, what went wrong. So here you see, no, Sholin Yonasan, they always knew what was going on. Always knew. And yet, Muslim learned it from you. And yet, as swift as they were, as strong as they were, died. Ratzon Hashem, killed. Benos Yisrael Shul Bechano. Daughters of Israel, cry for Shaul. Hamal Bishchem Shanim Adonim Amala Adi Zahav Alavushchem. Cry for Shaul. Why? Because he clothed you in scarlet with finery, and he placed golden jewelry upon your clothing. What's this all about? So look at number 17, the Medrash Shmuel. Benos Yisrael Shol Bechena. Why? So Rabbi Yehuda says, they cried for Shol, Shebishol Shebalei Nyotzen L'milchama, when their husbands would go out to battle with Shol, Hayazonim Farnason, he would support them. Shol would send home the money. And even more, Malbishon Shanim Adonim, he would give them scarlet with finery, jewelry, nice clothing. Mikanein Tachshita Nonu L'guf Mudan. Jewelry is only appropriate where the body is fit, where the body is healthy. So you see, the women love Shaul, so they will now lament his death. And so that's one shot. It becomes a different shot altogether. But another aspect of Shaul. So Shaul really was a popular king. Something else, he had respect for Torah. Ibn Nehemiah says, who are the Benos Yisrael? Sanhedrin. They would also cry for Shaul. When he hear a nice pshat in Torah, a nice svara, he would kiss on the mouth the person who uttered it. So you see, the women loved Shaul, and he was beloved to the Talmidei Chachamim as well, and he loved them also. So Shaul was popular with the people for the right reasons. He knew how to take care of the home front, and with the Sanhedrin as well, he was a lover of Torah too. And now you come to the heart, really, of the eulogy. Ech naflu gibarim b'sochem milchama. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? Yehonasan abomosecha chalol. Yehonasan, slain upon the heights. Meaning again, the Mefarshim say, this shock. Because if you have the heights, the Mefarshim say, even the chalashim can win from the heights. You always want the high ground. Except the Israelis who surrendered all the time to the enemy. But usually the army wants the high ground. He gives you an advantage. So Yehonasan, the great warrior, had the high ground. And Afal Pi Chen was killed. Sarli Alecha Ochi Yehonasan. I grieve for you. I'm distressed over my brother Yehonasan. Na'am Tali Ma'od. You are so pleasant to me. Nifla'asa Vascholi Me'avas Nashim. Your love was more wondrous to me than the love of women. This we discussed at length. We discussed Govan Yehonasan a few months back. That was last year. No, a few months back. So you love me like a love of a woman, meaning complete altruistic love. They got no benefit from one another. No physical benefit. They just were souls that bonded on the highest level in terms of appreciation of the other's good qualities. That's what he means here. Ech naflu giborim vayovdu klei milchama. How have the mighty fallen and the vessels, the weapons of war, have gone to waste. So this Eich Naflu Giborim, shock, grief, and recognition of the greatness of the warrior. Look at number 16. The Yalkut says, Eich Naflu Giborim, Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Yonason, Travayo Omrin, Mikan Sha'atzadikim, Kruyin Klei Milchama. You see, for him, the righteous are called weapons. And that's something that David exemplified in his life. To us, it sounds like a novel idea. But it's really part of our ancient history. Our great people were great warriors. Avram Avinu went to war. Moshe Rabbeinu went to war. David HaMelech, others. There was a tzaddikim. There's no contradiction to being a tzaddik and a great warrior. Not mutually exclusive. This notion, 2 minutes, this notion we'll return to, this aspect of tzidkus, which has really been suppressed in our people by centuries of exile. Summary, it's a beautiful elegy, a tribute to Sheol. Really what it accomplished was two things. First, it redeemed Sheol's honor in the eyes of the people after suffering such a humiliating, degrading death. And it also demonstrated the great magnanimity of David, which was essential in his efforts to reunite Klal Yisrael. Because in fact, what did David show? That he really himself had no grievance against Sheol. It's not a coup. It's unacceptable, the notion of a coup. It's unacceptable, the notion of killing Melech Yisrael. On the contrary, no matter what the king did to him personally, the king had traits which must be acknowledged and appreciated. Rabag notes, Rabag here has, I think, 56 different Musar moments that come out of Shmuel Aleph. He says here, number 53, number 18, Lodia she'en roi lo'odam she'yismach ben fo'loizov. David taught them, it's unfitting, unseemly for a person to gloat over his enemy's death. Avol roi she'yeh chorei benefil asar ve'godol. One should tremble over the death of a great officer in Israel. V'itochein v'yizkru ki kvar yitochein she'yikre lo'kah. You have to accept that in fact is God's judgment. It's all B'yad Hashem, and that's Kabbalah Sadin. Now, David is ready to extend his rulership beyond Shevet Yehuda. We'll see next time he starts from Hebron, and then he moves to solidify his reign. Who's going to constitute the initial opposition? Who do you think? The followers of Sheol. They're still alive, including Avner and others. How David deals with Avner, and how he deals, in fact, with Ishbosheth, who was surviving son of Sheol, who was made, anointed the king by Sheol's followers, how he deals with those conflicts, so that we'll discuss in the coming weeks. Okay. Next week, Wednesday night.